beloved master. The monk in charge of the monastery once said to Yakuzan, I have rung the bell. Please, Osho, it is time for the regular discourse. Yakuzan said, Okay, you come and follow me, holding up my bowl. The monk didn't understand the master's meaning, and Ungan, who was also present, asked, Master, when did you lose your arms and legs? Yakuzan said, You are simply wearing the monk's habit. Ungan replied, I am not other than this. What about you, Master? I don't have such a family, commented Yakuzan. Once, Yakuzan called a boy monk to him. Dogo asked, Why do you call such people? Yakuzan replied, Because of this. Dogo asked, Why don't you throw it away? Because I have used it for a long time, replied Yakuzan.
Friends, one of the sannyasins has asked a question. What is missing in communism? Zen fire and Zen wind. That is what is missing in communism. I have to go in a deeper analysis. Karl Marx was a giant intellectual. But he had no idea of religiousness other than Judaism and Christianity. Both are religions of prayer. Both believe in God, which is a fiction. Both believe in things which are irrational. For example, Moses passing through the sea and the sea giving the way. Nature makes no exceptions. And Jesus pretending to be the only begotten Son of God is absolutely absurd to any rational man like Karl Marx. His miracles are mythological. He made Lazarus come out of his grave, raised him back to life, and he could not do anything when he was on the cross. Even he could not produce a little water. He was thirsty. It was a hard day. And he was asking continuously for water. And this man has touched people and restored their eyes. Even touching his robe, People have lost their paralysis. He has walked on water, and this man could not flow with the cross towards the gods, his father. He was utterly helpless on the cross. That shows all those miracles are simply invented by the Christians to befool the world. Even Christian scholars are being embarrassed by all these miracles, by his virgin birth, by his shouting towards God on the cross, that, "Have you forsaken me?" Karl Marx was aware only of Judaism. He was a Jew, just as Jesus was a Jew. And he was aware of the Christianity and all its crimes against humanity. Burning millions of women alive, forcing them to confess that they are having intercourse with the devil. A continuous torture to any woman beating, not letting her sleep, not giving her food, putting ice on her chest for hours. These were the people who by chance invented the traction machine, because they were putting the women on the traction machine, which pulled the legs in one side and the head and the arms into another side. One woman was suffering from back ache. Suddenly her back ache disappeared. Now that traction machine has been transferred from the churches to the medical colleges, to hospitals. I know it with my personal experience. And when they were torturing those people on traction machine, sometimes the legs will come out. Sometimes the arms will be broken. Sometimes the head will be too much stretched that the woman will start saying that, "I confess that I have been having sex with the devil." And once she confessed, then they told him how to describe the devil, that he has two horns, that his sexual machinery is forked, all details, that he has to confess in a special court appointed by the Pope, the grand jury. A poor woman has to accept it, otherwise they will torture her to death. So what is the point? She knew confessing it means being burned, but death seems to be more peaceful than this life of continuous torture. More people have been killed by the Christian Church than anybody else. Karl Marx was reacting to these two religions, which are not religions at all. Fictions, superstitions, cults. But he was not aware of Taoism. He was not aware of Lao Tzu. He was not aware of Gautam Buddha and Mahavira. He was not aware that there are religions in the world which don't believe in God, which don't believe in prayer, which don't believe in heaven and hell. Because of this unawareness of the whole Eastern phenomenon, he created communism as materialism, dialectical materialism. It was out of ignorance. Otherwise, I have absolute trust that if he was aware of the Eastern research into the interior space of man, he was not an ordinary being, very extraordinarily intelligent person. He would have understood that Christianity and Judaism are not the only religions in the world. Buddhism has not killed a single person and converted the whole Asia just by simple dialogue, just by intellectual conversation, just by leading people into meditation. Karl Marx was right in his reaction against Christianity and Judaism. There is certainly no God as a creator. And because he denied God as a corollary, a logical corollary, he denied the human soul. It was not his experience. It was simply a logical thing to accept the human soul, which is not material, will be self-contradictory in his philosophy. By vocation, I am a logician, and by mistake, I am a mystic. But my mistake has paid me tremendously. Now I know that logic is just mental gymnastics. All the conclusions derived by Marx were based on logism, were based on thinking, philosophizing. He was not aware at all that there is something like meditation, that there is some way to go inwards. And the human soul, the human spirit, is not a byproduct of matter. It has its own existence. The matter in the body seems to be alive only because of the presence of consciousness in it. Once the consciousness leaves the body is simply dead, a corpse. But because he had no experience of meditation, and the West was not the right place for meditation, the whole Western mind was objective. And both religions, Judaism and Christianity, are objective. Their God is outside. And there is no God outside. It is fiction. He was denying fiction, not religiousness. But he thought this is the only religiousness. Based on Karl Marx's logic, Soviet Union, the first communist country, the greatest experiment in the whole history of mankind has remained hollow within. There is a deep urge for significance, for meaning, for eternity. A life which is just material has no meaning. You are just a machine, a robot. By birth, you start breathing mechanically, and by death, you stop breathing. If this is the only life between the cradle and the grave, this life has no meaning. What meaning it can have? And then there is no good and no bad. Even killing a person, you are not committing a murder, because it is only matter. If you kill your chair, I don't think any court is going to take action against you, that you murdered the chair. In China, because they believe that the women have no souls, husbands used to kill their wives. In China, there was no law against murdering your wife because she is just a furniture. You use it, and when you think it is useless, just finish with it. Find some new furniture. The same is the situation in Thailand. The woman has no soul and no rights. She is not human. But according to Karl Marx, the Soviet Union was based on his materialism. It was good in the beginning, because it destroyed all Orthodox Christians and their monasteries and their monks. It turned the churches into hospitals, into schools, into colleges. Big monasteries, because Russian Orthodox Church is one of the oldest church, older than Vatican, and much more Orthodox than any church of the world. You will not believe that in the name of celibacy, the Orthodox Russian Church allowed men to cut their genitals. Every year, when the Christmas comes, hundreds of people will cut their genitals in the name of becoming celibate. Women were not behind. They will cut their breasts. But neither by cutting your breasts you become celibate, neither by cutting your genitals you become celibate. Because the sex center exists in the brain, not in the genitals. Genitals is an extension of a center in the brain. That's why if you start just imagining about a beautiful woman, immediately your genitals start moving. You are thinking only. You can do it right now. The thought is in the mind, immediately transferred to the genitals, but it always begins in the mind. The genitals don't have any thinking power. They don't have eyes to see which woman is beautiful. It is your eyes who see and inform the brain, and then the genitals start functioning. If you really want celibate people, then they need a brain operation. the center of sex should be removed. Then you will be simply impotent, not celibate. Karl Marx was right that such kind of religion should be finished. They are against humanity, they protect poverty and they protect the richness. They are against revolution, they are against any change. Obviously, he was right to call them opium of the people, hope of the hopeless. But if Christianity and Judaism were the only religions, then the Soviet Union would not have any need, any urge to find out the inner world. Just think it. You cannot have the outside world without having the inside world. They exist together like two sides of the coin. And there are scientific methods available. Zen is the most scientific method to inquire into your consciousness. It takes you beyond mind into a space called no mind, no self, but pure awareness, and you have a taste of eternity and immortality. This is what is missing in Soviet communism, and the danger is that Gorbachev is opening the doors. All those Christians immediately enter back. All those cockroaches and rats who have been thrown out in 70 years' time will be the first to enter. Just this Christmas, thousands and thousands of Christians entered to celebrate Christmas in Soviet Union. Today I received the news that one of the most idiotic cult is the cult of Hare Krishna and Hare Rama. I have come across every kind of idiot. But these two cults, witnesses of Jehovah, and this movement of Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, these are the worst idiots in the whole world. Now Soviet Union has allotted them land to make a temple for Krishna. Now these idiots, which are mostly American, not a single Hindu is involved in the Krishna movement. It is only the Americans, ex-hippies. I have talked even with their founder, Prabhupada, and he was such a senile idiot. But he managed to find other idiots to be followers. Now giving them a space in Soviet land, allowing them to make a temple of Krishna, and allowing them to translate Srimad Bhagavad Gita into Russian is bringing poison into the country. Gorbachev is not aware what Srimad Bhagavad Gita's message is, it is war. This is the only religious scripture in the world which teaches war, violence, destruction. Now, allowing these idiots to translate Srimad Bhagavad Gita in Russian, and on the other hand, Gorbachev is trying to make a world peaceful, is contradictory. But these people will rush in from all sides, all kinds of cults which have no base in reality, which don't have any logic, which don't have any rationale, which don't have any scientific approach. They will destroy the whole Soviet Union's mind. In 70 years, whatever has been achieved is in immense danger. Again, monks will be living as parasites because they don't work. Again, these people, Hare Krishna and Hare Rama, they will be parasites. They don't work. The danger is great because the Soviet people who are present today have no idea of the revolution. They are almost born after revolution. Or when they were very small children, the revolution happened, they don't have any memory of it. I don't think Gorbachev has any idea what happened in the revolution and how much difficult it was to destroy these stupid religions, superstitions. It took tremendous labor to clean the whole Soviet land from the past, the hangover of primitive, barbarous fears, greed, possessiveness. Now calling these people again back, opening the doors for all kinds of diseases, and Soviet people are feeling a certain hollowness within themselves. Something is missing. Because Karl Marx cannot provide any spirituality to them. But these bogus preachers will talk about spirituality and it is pure talk. They don't know anything about spirituality either. But they can manage to fill the vacuum in the Soviet heart with all their belief systems, with all their superstitions. It is going backwards, not forwards. I warn the Soviet people that please be careful. Whatever Gorbachev is doing with great and good intentions, but he is not aware that once you open the doors, all CIA agents and FBI agents, all detectives from all over the world will be entering into the country as monks, as priests, as bishops, as archbishops. Just now, few Soviet states which have never raised their voice are raising their voice that we want independence. We want to separate from Soviet Union. In one of the Soviet countries, They have tried experimentally elections, democratic elections. Soviet Union has been the dictatorship of the proletariat. Only one party, the party of the proletariat, the Communist Party. So there was no question of any election. Although elections were held, but there was only one candidate to vote for. Under Gorbachev's directions, they have tried in one place or two places. Communist Party's candidate, which is decided by the Central Bureau in Kremlin, and they allowed the people of that state to have their own candidates. Of course, they are also communists, but it should be a warning that those people of the locality have won the election against the central nominated candidates. Now nationality is coming up. Mohammedans would like to separate. There are few Mohammedan countries in Soviet Union. And every state which constitutes the Union is bound to become more and more nationalistic, which is a disease. So without knowing the consequences, Gorbachev is going ahead. He can spoil the whole great experiment of 70 years. Once Soviet Union is destroyed, there is no hope for other communist countries either. They are small countries. They can be destroyed without difficulty. Soviet Union is the central force of the whole communism in the world. It has to survive. But the trouble is, the idiots will rush in. The vested interests will rush in. No right person, no Gautam Buddha is going there unless Gorbachev and the Soviet Union invites him. Nobody is going there. Those who will be rushing on their own have their motivation. If Gorbachev really wants peace in the world at the cost of communism, that peace is not worth. Communism is one of the greatest experiments in human evolution. It has put the foundation of a new temple for humanity. But it has put only the foundation. The pillars are missing, the roof is missing. That can be done only by people who are fully awakened, whom I am calling the Buddhas, not Buddhists. Buddhists are as superstitious as any other organized religion. But the awakened people, they should be invited. From all over the world, there are few people still in the same space as Gautam Buddha. They should be invited to teach meditation in the universities, to teach meditation in the colleges, to teach meditation to the public. And meditation has nothing against communism. Meditation will use the communism as the base. and will put the pillars and the roof on the base. Soviet citizen needs something of meditative experience that will fill its hollowness. Otherwise, just work and death, there seems to be no meaning and significance. If you were not born, there was no harm. If you die, nobody is going to miss you. You will be replaced. Soviet citizens need dignity and individuality and a certain sense of direction into eternity. That is what is missing. And the danger is, before the right people can be invited, wrong people will rush in and start destroying the 70 years great experiment. I would rather prefer a third world war than destruction of Soviet Union. In the name of peace, Gorbachev can go beyond the limits. He is already going. The death of Soviet Union will be death of all evolution, of all possibilities, of a world without boundaries, of a world without classes, of a world richer in every sense of the word, not only money, but consciousness too, not only power, but art and music and dance. Have you ever observed a simple phenomenon that will give you the right direction? Before the revolution, Soviet Union has produced people like Leo Tolstoy, Gorky, Turgenev, Chekhov, Dostoevsky. These five names are so great as far as literature is concerned that if you want to find 10 great names in the whole world, these five will be the first five. The other five will be 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. But these five cannot be dropped in any calculation. Their creation is so great. Just a single man, Fyodor Dostoevsky, is enough to defeat all creative novelists of the world. But what happened after the revolution? No Gorky, no Turgenev, no Dostoevsky, no Tolstoy. What happened? In these 70 years, Soviet Union has not been able to create a single person of that quality. The reason is clear. The Soviet citizen has lost his soul, has lost his consciousness, has believed in Karl Marx blindly that the soul of man is only a byproduct of matter. If the soul is just a byproduct of matter, then there is no possibility of haikus, no possibility for poetry. I have been reading the poetry before revolution and after revolution. In fact, after revolution, the poetry should have risen higher. But that is not the case. Before revolution, when the Russia was poorest of the countries, It was not even a capitalist country, it was a feudal country. Karl Marx had never expected that Soviet Union is going to be born out of the poorest country, most traditional, backward in every sense, is going to become the first communist country. It was not even capitalist. According to Karl Marx's calculations, a feudal society cannot move directly to communism. It has to move through capitalism. Only capitalism creates classes clearly, the proletariat and the bourgeois. But I told you, logic is not everything. Life has its own ways. It happened in Soviet Union, but because Karl Marx has been the foundation, it has destroyed all flowers of consciousness. No literature of great status. Even Tolstoy's son, Leo Tolstoy, is just a poor novelist. After the revolution, and before the revolution, in a poor country, such great literature was born. It shows something. It shows that unless you have a fulfillment, a certain contentment inside you, you cannot share it in poetry, in music. From where you will bring it? It has to flow from you. You cannot share it because you don't have it. The Soviet citizen is the poorest as far as consciousness is concerned. But Karl Marx has given it a right foundation. That foundation is missing in the East. This has been the dilemma of whole humanity. In the East, people have condemned the body, condemned matter, called the matter illusory, Maya. It does not really exist, it only appears to exist. It is made of the same stuff as dreams are made of. They denied the world, and that is the reason for the East remaining poor, sick, starvation. Only half of the humanity was accepting the inner world, but denying the outer world. The other half of humanity was accepting the material world and was denying the inner world. Both were half, and no man who is half can be contented. You have to be whole. Richer in the body, richer in science, richer in meditation, richer in consciousness. Only a whole person is a holy person, according to me. I want Zorba and Buddha to meet together. Zorba alone is hollow. His dance has not an eternal significance. It is momentary pleasure. Soon he will be tired of it. Unless you have sources inexhaustible, available to you from the cosmos itself, unless you become existential, you cannot become whole. This is my contribution to humanity, the whole person. The East has denied the body, and the outside world, and the West has denied the soul and the inner world. Both have lived half. And just as there is no half circle in the world, circle means complete circle. A half circle is only an arc, it is not a circle. So the West has remained half arc, the East has remained half arc, and a man like Lord Tennyson wrote that West is West, East is East, and the twin cell never meet. Just bullshit. They are meeting here now. And unless they meet, there is no hope for humanity. Russia has the foundation. It needs right pillars and a roof. What you will do with the foundation alone? It needs to fill its hollowness with light, with blissfulness, with ecstasy, with a new luminousness. Ask the awakened ones of the world to enter into Russia and teach people a scientific religiousness, not Christianity, not Hinduism, not Srimad Bhagavad Gita, nor Holy Bible. Holy Bible has 388 pages of pornography. Sheer pornography. And Srimad Bhagavad Gita is a sermon by Lord Krishna of the Hindus, the perfect incarnation of God, in favor of war. A great war happened because of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. It happened 5,000 years before. And it broke India's backbone. After that war, India has never risen beyond poverty, beyond small things. It cannot look up to the stars and the blue sky. When you are hungry, it will be interesting for you to know that there are biblical scholars which have been prohibited by the Pope, that no priest should listen to the biblical scholars, and they are really the great scholars about Bible, how it was born, how the Gospels were managed, what has been left over. And the four Gospels that are there in the New Testament are not the only Gospels. There were other Gospels which have been denied and destroyed. Only one Gospel has survived because it was written in India. One of the direct disciples of Jesus, Thomas, immediately moved to India. And he remained in South India. Learned all the arts of yoga and meditation. And you will be surprised, he is the only person in the whole world whose body is still intact in Goa. Every year the body is taken out and you can watch it. It is as if he has just died, and it is not by any scientific method that it has been preserved. Scientists have been observing it, watching it with amazement. 2000 years before, how those people managed, because there is no sign of anything and the body seems to be still red with blood. After 2000 years, it has not deteriorated. The body starts deteriorating immediately. Within 3 days, it is stinking. And every year the body is taken out of Thomas. This is real miracle. It is the only body in the whole world which has been preserved, and scientists cannot figure out how. It has been preserved by yoga and meditation, not by any scientific method from the outside. There were no science in those days. But he became almost a sannyasin in India. He forgot all about Jesus and his miracles and all teachings. He became almost a man of the East. He started wearing the robe of a sannyasin, the ochre robe. He started using the sannyasin's ancient old sandals made of wood, which is very difficult to walk on them. He was using even the thread that Hindus use around their neck and waist. He shaved his head just like a yogi. And he was well respected. He was allowed into the Buddhist monasteries of Nalanda and Takshashila. Both the monasteries Jesus has also visited. But not for a long time. So he could not get into meditation. He heard about things which he repeats in the Bible, which are really Buddha's statements. The biblical scholars, which are the authentic scholars, they are all Christians, they say there is every possibility there was no Jesus at all. It is a myth. And it is simply Krishna whose name has become Christ. The Sanskrit name Krishna in Bengali becomes Christo. If it can become Christo, there is not much to make it Christ. From Krishna to Christo, and from Christo to Christ. These biblical scholars have found many things which are amazing. It is possible that it is the myth traveling that has created Jesus Christ, but he knows nothing. And to allow Srimad Bhagavad Gita to be translated in the Russian will be one of the dangerous steps against peace. 5000 years before, the great warrior Arjuna, seeing millions of people ready to fight, because it was a family fight. Arjuna and Duryodhana were cousin brothers. Duryodhana has his father who was blind. In fact, he was the eldest than the father of Arjuna. He was supposed to be the king, but he was blind. So naturally the second eldest son, Dhritarashtra, was made the king when the father died. But the old man who could not get into power was very much ambitious that his sons should get the power. He had 100 sons because he had many wives and a blind man nothing else to do. He knows neither day nor night and no other work allotted to him. So he had 100 sons and the father of Arjuna has only 5 sons. But Arjuna was a great archer, perhaps the greatest the world has ever known. The whole thing depended on Arjuna. If he refused to fight with his own brothers and all the relatives on both the sides, the teacher of Arjuna who had taught him archery was on the other side, because there was every possibility that the other side will win. There were 100 brothers and these were only 5. They had many relatives, they have all come from all over the world. You will be surprised that Arjuna's one wife had come from Mexico. In Sanskrit, the name of Mexico is Makshika. It is from Makshika that Mexico is derived. So even the Mexican princes had come to fight for Arjuna. But these 5 brothers had only one wife. Because all 5 were interested in this woman, which was Krishna's sister. So it was a dangerous problem. All the 5 brothers, and the eldest was Yudhishthir, second was Bhima, third was Arjuna, and then 2 other brothers. So obviously Yudhishthir has the first right. But Arjuna was the most beautiful and the most important person in that whole millions of soldiers who had gathered. It was a strange war, because both the sides there were relatives, friends. Even Krishna, when he was asleep, Duryodhana, the head of the other side, and Arjuna both approached him. And of course Arjuna was his sister's husband, but he was a humble man, as all great men are humble. He sat by the side of his feet, he was asleep, and Duryodhana was a very arch egoist. He sat just by his side of the head. So when he opened his eyes, first he saw Arjuna and he asked, "For what you have come?" Arjuna said, "Look behind, my cousin brother is also present. We both have come for the same purpose. with whom you are going to fight in the war. The preparations are going on. We want you to decide on which side you are going to be. And Krishna was a great politician, very great politician. He said, because Duryodhana is elder than you, let him first decide. I will divide, on one side I will be, and on another side my whole army. You both are my friends. So let Duryodhana choose. Duryodhana certainly chose the army, because what to do with one man? And Krishna had a greatest army in the country. And Arjuna said, that's exactly what I wanted. You be my charioteer. So on that first day of the war, both the armies are standing face to face, and Krishna brings the chariot of Arjuna. To confront the enemy, but seeing all the faces of the friends on both sides, all relatives, in some way or other, seeing one's own teacher on the other side, seeing one's own great grand uncle who loved Arjuna very much, but was considerate of the blind man who had missed the kingdom. It was his right. He was there. Arjuna became puzzled. He said, what I will gain if I kill all these people? Just sitting on a golden throne with all these people dead, I don't see any point in this war. Take my chariot out of the front. I am going to the Himalayas to meditate. This world is not for me. If I have to kill so many people just to be here, it is better to renounce it. It was Krishna who forced him in 18 chapters of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, continuous argument in favor of war. And when finally he could not convince him, at last he took the same step as all religions have taken. It is God's will. You cannot go out of the war. What God has chosen has to happen. That's what the Bible says. Don't change anything. Whatever is the God's will is going to happen. Now, if I had been in place of Arjuna, I would have said to Krishna, that's okay. This is what God has chosen, I am going to the Himalayas. But Krishna was respected as the incarnation of God. Not only incarnation, Hindus have many incarnations of God. Krishna is the only perfect incarnation. He was so powerful that Brahmins simply praised him. It is always power that is praised. a man who has captured 16,000 women from his whole kingdom, all the beautiful women, whether married, unmarried, it did not matter. Just his army will catch any woman that will be seen by Krishna, and he simply gave the indication, take her to the palace. He has collected 16,000 women. You cannot even remember their names. And he was married only to one woman. All these women had their children, their husbands, their old parents to take care of. 16,000 families were destroyed by this man. And he forced Arjuna that this is God's will, you have to fight. You cannot go against God's will. God has been used for all crimes. The war happened, it was a massacre. Millions of people died. And the backbone of India was broken. India became so afraid of war, because from every family somebody was killed. The husband, the father, the son, every family has deprived somebody. The whole country was sad, and that sadness has become so deep settled in India's mind that when small tribes, primitive tribes of Turks, of Mongols, of Hunas, of Mughals, of British, came to India, India simply gave the way. They had no desire to fight. Whoever came was accepted without any difficulty. Small groups, Turks came, only 500 people, and a country of 33 million people. At that time, 2,000 years before, and still India simply accepted them. It was not ready to fight. It has seen the war. It has seen the destructiveness. And who was responsible for all this? Krishna was responsible for all this. To me, he is not even a human being. Nothing to say about incarnation of God. And when I saw today that they are giving place to him in Soviet Union, making a temple for Krishna, and allowing these hippies from America that means all kinds of idiots and stupids and superstitious people will enter into Soviet Union. This opening can be dangerous. Certainly Soviet Union needs a spirituality. It has materialism, that is the base. It needs a spirituality that will raise the temple of the soul. Just as you need scientists for a material wealth, technology, you need Buddhas, enlightened people, to help. You become also a Buddha. But these kind of people will not come on their own. You will have to persuade them. You will have to invite them. Only then they can help you. With a welcoming heart, they will pour all that they know, and Marxism will become a complete philosophy if it can be joined with Zen. That's why I say, what is missing? Zen fire, Zen wind. But Christianity should be prohibited. Judaism should be prohibited. Hinduism should be prohibited. Islam should be prohibited. Otherwise, these people have been the cause of the trouble. Again, you are falling back. 70 years struggle to create a new society. And then one single man who knows nothing of the revolution, who knows nothing how hard it was to raise the country amongst all the anti-communist countries. They were already like vultures all around to destroy Soviet Union and its communism. Because even one country becomes communist, it is dangerous. It is dangerous to all capitalist countries because that fragrance will start spreading. Soviet Union is a hope for humanity. Gorbachev should not take the responsibility of destroying Soviet Union, but by opening, he is being praised by the capitalist press, by the capitalist news media all over the world. That is very cunning. They are making him a great hero. By becoming a hero, he will completely forget the implications that will follow the opening of the doors of the Soviet Union to all and sundry, to Tom and Dick and Harry. It is a scientific experiment. Soviet Union has done half the work with great difficulty, with tremendous sacrifice. The new generation is not aware. I have gone to the deepest roots of the revolution, and I can see how much Soviet Union has suffered to be a communist country. How much it has sacrificed. And it has lived in constant danger of being destroyed. But now it has come to a point where it is one of the biggest world powers. It should not be reduced from its power. It is good to be a peacemaker. Perhaps soon Gorbachev will receive a Nobel Prize. That is not very noble. I call it ignoble prize. Because the man who created the Nobel Prize, it was his name, Nobel, but his function was, in the First World War and before that, he was the biggest manufacturer of arms, and he was supplying to the whole world arms. Every war was fought with his arms. Both the sides were using his arms. Through these arms, he collected great richness. And then the Christian guilt came over him when he was at the time of his death, that I am the greatest creator of war material, and all the people who have died with my arms And everybody who has died with my arms. In any country, anywhere, both the parties were having his arms. He was the only person who was refining and refining and making better and better war material. He became afraid of hellfire. He donated his whole money and created a trust that every year, just out of interest, Nobel Prizes should be given to different branches of science, art. Literature, music, any contribution to humanity, it was simply trying to erase the guilt. And this Nobel Prize committee, the head, the chairman of the committee is the King of Sweden. One of my sannyasins, who is a Nobel Prize winner, ask the king, because only a Nobel Prize winner can nominate somebody else's name to the committee which decides to whom the Nobel Prizes should go. He told the King of Sweden that, "What about this man, my name?" The king said, "Never utter that name again." My suggestion for you, don't bring that name to the Nobel Committee. Because you will feel embarrassed. It is impossible for us to give this man Nobel Prize. But the same way Leo Tolstoy was denied every 50 years. The Nobel Committee opens its records for public to view. When last time they opened their public records, the people found that Leo Tolstoy was nominated by a Nobel Prize winner for a Nobel Prize, but was denied on the ground that he is not an orthodox Christian. He is a Christian, but he is not orthodox. He is very flexible. On this ground, and the question was literature, not Christianity, they did not even talk about his literature. The man has created the greatest novels in the world. Anna Karenina, or War and Peace, is such a vast world that the man must have the greatest mind of his century. But not, the literature was not discussed. And the man who has nominated him for a literary prize for literature, but he was denied on the grounds that he is not an orthodox Christian. That is strange. Is this prize only for orthodox Christians? And this Nobel Prize has been used as a political weapon. They always give Nobel Prize to Soviet scientists. It is a tricky game. Because Soviet government up to now will prohibit the person to accept the prize from the capitalist world. And will prohibit the person to go to the Nobel Committee convention and accept the prize. Because from there, the man becomes persuaded by the capitalist. Nobel Prize comes with almost $200,000, that is 20 lakh rupees or 30 lakh rupees. So the man, for the first time in Soviet Union, you don't have a private property. For the first time he has seen 30 lakh rupees. And for the first time he is out of Soviet Union. He can escape and ask for refuge in any capitalist country. And he can release the secrets of Soviet scientists to the capitalists and gain prestige, awards, money and everything. So Soviet government up to now has been preventing people like Zakharov and others. It was a very dangerous thing. If you prevent, then the scientist becomes angry with the Soviet government. He freaks out. He wants to accept the prize. Because he freaks out, Soviet government has to take measures to prevent him from escaping out of the country. Even Zakharov's insistence that he would accept the Nobel Prize, immediately Soviet government has to take action. He was removed from the Director General of the Science Academy. His car was taken out, back, because nobody possesses anything. Everything belongs to the nation. The government gives allots things to people, and he was reduced into ordinary member of the academy. But his wife was having an operation in Paris, who is also a scientist. She managed from Paris to reach to the Nobel Prize convention, and on behalf of her husband, she accepted the Nobel Prize. So either the Nobel Prize is a kind of bribe to take the secrets out of Soviet Union, or it creates a trouble for the scientists if the government prevents him. And if he wants to get out, then he has to be jailed. In any way, one scientist's life and his contribution to the Soviet Union is destroyed. Now the Nobel Prize has been given to politicians. Even men like Kissinger gets a Nobel Prize. And what is his contribution to humanity? I call it ignoble prize because it is full of blood. Blood of millions of people who were massacred by nobles' weapons. No man of dignity should accept it. I told my sannyasin that you should not have mentioned my name. I will reject the Nobel Prize if they give me. It is a bribe and nothing else. Bribe to shut up people's mouths against capitalism. Bribe to take out secrets from Soviet Union. Now, opening the door of Soviet Union is really dangerous, and I am saying it as a friend. Soviet Union has done half the work. The base is completely solid. All that it needs, few pillars and a shed, and the shrine for human soul will be ready. The new man can come out only out of Soviet Union. But what is happening makes me suspicious. Soon Gorbachev will have the Nobel Prize, I predict. He is being praised by all capitalist press for the simple reason that this praise gets into his head and he forgets all implications that may destroy the Soviet Union. A 70-year great experiment in changing the structure of the society. And they have succeeded. Now the second step is to change the consciousness of man. You have changed the structure of the society. It was an economic revolution. That's why I said yesterday, if I come to Soviet Union, I am bringing another revolution, a revolution which will be spiritual. That is what is missing, a spiritual revolution. If that revolution happens, Soviet Union will be the pride of humanity. I see both the sides of Gorbachev. He is doing good in bringing freedom, but he is also taking risks which he will not be able to prevent once all these people enter in. Then he will have to start from ABC. It will take 70 years again to bring to this same situation. I would like him to open the door for scientists, open the door for poets, open the door for mystics, open the door for musicians, dancers, painters, open the door for novelists, open the door for all creative people. Open the door for meditators, but not for all and sundry. Particularly not for any organized religion and not for any stupid and idiotic ideology. He does not know anything about Bhagavad Gita, and he has allowed these Hare Krishna people to translate into Russian. And he does not know that this is the only scripture in the whole world devoted completely to war. It was perfectly good for Adolf Hitler. It was perfectly good for Benito Mussolini. It is not good for people who want peace, for people who want this earth dropping its boundaries of nations, of religions. It is not good for those who want one world, one earth, one humanity. The second question is also from another sannyasin. He has asked, why do you not want to allow Christianity to enter the Soviet Union? Because I love the Soviet Union. And I would not like a poisonous snake, a cobra, hiding inside the Pope to enter into Soviet Union. He can come to India, there is no problem. He can go around in any capitalist country, there is no problem. But not Soviet Union. because I consider Christianity as the greatest criminal religion in the world. And I would not lie again. In 70 years they have been with great difficulty erasing the programming of Christianity from the Soviet mind. Now the Soviet mind at least is free of Christianity, free of God, free of heaven, free of hell. This is perfectly good. Don't introduce all these things again. But one thing certainly Soviet Union needs which Christianity cannot provide, that can be provided only by Zen. Zen is pure meditation. It has nothing to do with hell, heaven, God, Jesus, miracles. It has nothing to do with. It does not even talk about anything. It simply talks about the science, step by step, how to enter into your own inner world and to see the life eternal. Once you have seen your life as eternity, from eternity to eternity, you are a totally different man. Your life becomes of great significance. Thousands of blossoms start arising in you. Your life becomes creative. You know that existence cares for you. You know that existence never creates another carbon copy. That existence always comes up with absolutely original faces. Nobody is dispensable. Once you are gone, your place will remain empty forever. This gives significance. This gives meaning. This gives you a feeling you are needed by existence. Without you, something will be missing. Some place will remain empty. Nobody can fulfill it. That's why yesterday I argued against Rigardi because he wanted to be a Rajneesh in his second incarnation. Existence never repeats. And you cannot be anybody else than yourself. That is authentic religiousness. Every individual has his own uniqueness. That gives him dignity and grace. I don't want Christianity or Hinduism or Mohammedanism to enter into Soviet Union. Because all these religions are of prayer. Prayer is extrovert. Meditation is introvert. If you want to allow people, then allow the people whose religion is based on meditation, not on prayer. That should be the clear-cut distinction, a criterion that can be followed without any fear. Allow Lao Tzu, allow people of Tao, allow people of Zen, allow people who belong to Sufism, allow people who belong to Hasidism. These are all people who in some way or other are meditative. But Zen comes to the very highest peak, purest meditation. refined by centuries of mystics in India, mystics in China, mystics in Japan. It has moved through so much refinement, sharpening, continuous sharpening, that there is nothing else compared to it. What the poor Pope will do in Soviet Union? Just kiss the land. So he can kiss in the Vatican, he has enough land. 8 square miles, sovereign country, 8 square miles is not enough for him to kiss. Go on kissing. He wastes so much money for kissing different lands. He came to India and kissed the New Delhi airport. I was in Kathmandu. I immediately gave a press conference and told that if he wanted to kiss cow dung, we could have given him a parcel full of cow dung. Why waste $8 million in visiting India and just to kiss the cow dung? But cow dung gives you a taste of Hinduism. What Christianity has done to the whole world? It has created more poverty by preventing people from using birth control methods. Now birth control methods are 100% proof. First they were not. The pill has to be taken before you make love. Now there is another pill that you can take afterwards. There is no need to take it before. This is far safer. And sometimes the pill disturbs the hormonal system of the woman. So a third pill has come into being which the man can take. The woman need not take any pill. Now things are so simple, why go on increasing unnecessary population? And all Christian priests are insisting for more poverty, for more orphans. The reason is they need more Catholics, more Christians. From these orphans, from these poor people, they can get new converts. Already Catholic Church has 600 million people under its fold. Still there is no satisfaction. It wants more and more people. At the risk of the whole planet going to commit suicide. It is because of Christianity, and they have influenced all other religions, because it is the greatest religion as far as the membership is concerned, the most powerful. Other religions have also followed the same. Muhammad married 9 wives. He was absolutely uneducated. He used to have epileptic fits. And he married a woman just for money. The woman was 40 years old and he was only 26. But the woman was a widow and had immense money. She was the first Mohammedan. She turned Muhammad's epileptic fits into trance. in his epileptic fit, he will tremble and foam will come out from his mouth, and he will feel so much trembling that all the blankets in the house will be put over him. Still he was trembling, and whatever he will utter in that unconscious state, Khadija, the woman who was well educated, super rich, it is she who has written the Quran. It is not Muhammad. He could not even sign his name. And the Quran has been written in 30 years time, because you have to wait for the epileptic fit to come again. Then nobody knows whether Khadija was writing what Muhammad was saying or she was inventing, because it is a very poor scripture. There is nothing much in it. Mohammedan friends have asked me to talk about the Holy Quran. They have been sending me copies, latest editions, most beautifully printed. I look into them for many times, but I could not find a single sentence worthy to be commented upon. I can criticize, but then the whole Mohammedans will be just ready to burn my community. That's what the Greek church threatened me. When I was in Greece, only for 4 weeks, tourist visa, after 2 weeks, and I had not gone out of the house was on a small island, belonged to the best film producer of Greece. He was my host. It was just on a hilltop, a direct fall into the ocean. A very beautiful place, beautiful garden, and I had never gone out of the gate, but friends from all over Europe came running to Greece, and the Archbishop of Greek Orthodox Church, which is the oldest church in the world. It is the Greek church which has changed Christianity completely according to itself. The Archbishop threatened the president of the country, the prime minister of the country, and threatened me that if the government does not deport me immediately, I am going to dynamite the house and burn all the people inside alive. This is religion. And I have nothing to do with Greeks. There were at the most 10 or 12 Greek friends whom I have already corrupted. So there was no problem. They are my sannyasins. And he was threatening the government that my stay in Greece will corrupt the morality, will destroy the religion. And I told, when they deported me to a world press conference who had gathered on the airport to take my interview, I told them that this country has the weakest religion and the weakest morality. They have 2,000 years to condition the mind of the country into a certain kind of morality they think is virtuous, into certain superstitions they think it is religion, and they are afraid of a tourist who is going to be only 2 weeks more. If a religion 2,000-year-old can be corrupted by a tourist in 2 weeks, it is worth corrupting. It should be corrupted. He was threatening me that I will take a procession against you. I informed him that I will enjoy it. I enjoy all kinds of things. But the procession never came. So I asked Amrito, my ambassador in Greece, a beautiful woman, used to be a model, once was chosen to be the beauty queen of Greece. I love beauty. I love everything that is beautiful in this world. The flowers, the faces, the stars, the moon, the ocean, everything. Beauty is my religion. I asked Amrito that how many people are Christians. He said almost 90%. And I asked him how many attend the church. He said not more than 4%. I said, who are those 4% people? He laughed. He said, you won't believe. They are the oldest women, ancient women, ones whose 1 foot is in the grave and 1 foot in the church. I said, how many women listen to this archbishop? She counted, she went, only 6 women were listening his thundering sermon. Of course, he could not bring a procession of 6 old women. It would have been really a great circus. I had told my people that when he comes, we should join the procession. That old idiot wanted to burn all my people who were living with me just for 2 weeks. What Christianity has done to the world that you are asking me why I don't want to allow Christianity to enter Soviet Union? I love Soviet Union because it is a great experiment. It is a milestone in the history of man. Of course, it is only half. But still, half is better than nothing. The other half can be raised on top of it. What Lenin and Stalin have produced, they have given a good foundation for anybody to raise the temple of consciousness, and this temple will be not belonging to any religion, it will be belonging to all individuals who want to enter into initiation, who want to enter on the path. The Buddhas don't lead you, they simply indicate the way. You have to follow your way alone, because nobody can go inside you. The Buddhas can point the place, you have to go. And it is good that nobody can go inside you. Otherwise, politicians must have reached before any Buddha. It is your privilege, absolute privilege, and your freedom. Nobody can enter there. But if you go, you will start growing in a new dimension, vertical. Just as all animals move horizontally, at a certain point in history, some animals, according to Charles Darwin, stood up vertically. That's how man was born. From horizontal animal walking on the four, he started walking on 2 feet, and 2 hands were free for the first time. These 2 hands have created all science, all technology, the houses, the roads, the electricity, the television, everything that you enjoy, everything that is needed for humanity. These 2 hands were free. No animal can do these things. His all 4 are engaged in walking. This is one revolution. The gorilla becomes man, from horizontal to vertical. The similar kind of state is inside. Your consciousness is still horizontal. Your body is vertical. Your consciousness is still moving in time, horizontal. The function of the meditation is to turn your consciousness also vertical. When your body and consciousness are together vertical, you are an enlightened one. The vertical consciousness knows the ultimate truth, the beauty, the good, the godliness of existence. The sutras, our beloved masters, the monk in charge of the monastery once said to Yaku-san, "I have rung the bell, please also. It is time for the regular discourse. You should understand one thing about Zen as a foundation, that nothing is regular. Everything is spontaneous. The whole emphasis is not on routine, but on spontaneity. If the master feels like speaking, if existence wants through him to become a song, then he sings the song. Otherwise not. There is no question of regularity. It's spontaneity. It has been thousands of times that the master will come to the podium, will stand there for a few minutes, and nothing is coming. He will bow down to the assembly and return to his room. This is how Zen was born. Buddha has never come in his morning discourse with anything in his hand. One day he came with a lotus flower. So strange. People who have lived with him for years have never seen him carrying anything. And more strange was his silence. He just went on looking at the lotus flower. Minutes started becoming longer and longer and longer. 1 hour passed, and it seemed almost as if a whole life has passed. 10,000 sannyasins waiting, watching, and Buddha is completely silent, looking at the lotus flower. And then Mahakashyapa, for the first time, he has been for 20 years a disciple of Buddha. He has not spoken a single word. He has not even taken the initiation. He has never asked Buddha to initiate me. He simply got initiated himself. He shaved his head, brought yellow robes, became a monk, gave himself a name, sat under the tree. The same tree he continued to sit for year on year. Everybody was wondering that this fellow is strange, he seems to be insane. They will ask him and he will simply say, keep quiet. But that day when they were all silent, he simply started laughing loudly. Everybody looked at him, what happened to this man? He has been insane for 20 years, suddenly he has become sane, or vice versa. Buddha looked at him and waved his hand that, come close to me. This was for the first time in 20 years Buddha has called him. Mahakashyapa came and Buddha told to the assembly of the sannyasins that what I could say in words I have said to you. What I could not say into words, I am transferring to Mahakashyapa. And he gave the lotus flower to Mahakashyapa. This is how Zen was born. This was the beginning of the river of Zen. No words, just something invisible. People just watched in awe what is happening. And for the first time, Mahakashyapa touched Buddha's feet, but did not say a single word. In Buddhist scriptures, there is no other mention about Mahakashyapa, simply this mention. But Mahakashyapa is the first Zen master. From one master to another master, Zen has been coming down up to me. If Mahakashyapa, as in the beginning, I am perhaps at the very end of a long, long heritage, 25 centuries, hundreds of masters transferring in deep silence and meditation. What cannot be said in words. So when the monk asked Yakushan, Yakushan is a great master, without any doubt. I have rung the bell. The bell is rung to call all the sannyasins together in the assembly hall. Please also, it is time for the regular discourse. He used the word regular wrongly. With a master, things are spontaneous. Nothing is regular. Even when you say and you see regularity, it is only in your conception. For the master, it is spontaneous. Yakushan said, okay, you come and follow me, holding up my bowl, because I have not finished my breakfast. Now, this was a very strange situation, going to the assembly hall. Is he going to deliver the discourse or eating his rice? And the monk felt a little embarrassed that I am following him with the bowl of rice what people will think of me, that idiot, why he is carrying the bowl with the rice behind the master. The monk did not understand the master's meaning. And Ungan, who was also present, asked, "Master, when did you lose your arms and legs? Why you are not carrying your bowl yourself? When did you lose your arms and legs?" Even Ungan, who finally became enlightened, could not understand the meaning. The meaning was that the discourse is nothing but a nourishment. It is a spiritual nourishment. Just as the body needs food, your spirituality needs nourishment. Carrying the bowl behind him, he was giving to the monk an insight that think of all your meditations and discourses in terms of nourishment. The master is nothing but food. Food for your soul. But Ungan did not understand either. He thought, what is the matter? Because every monk carries his own bowl. Unless he is sick, unless he has lost his arms in some accident, what happened? When did you lose your arms and legs? Yaku-san said, "You are simply wearing the monk's habit. You don't know, and you cannot know. You are only wearing the monk's habit, the monk's robe, but you don't understand anything." Ungan replied, "I am not other than this. This is what I am. I am standing utterly naked before you. If you call me just the monk's habit, perhaps this is what I am." This was coming from a deeper source, indicating to thisness. Buddha's whole philosophy can be contained in the word with a simple word: thisness, suchness, tathata. This moment, this is what I am. You can call me anything you like. It does not matter. This was a great answer. Ungan replied, "I am not other than this." "What about you, master?" Yaku-san said, "I don't have such a family." A strange answer from the master. What does it mean that he does not have such a family? I will tell you one anecdote to have some feel of it. When Al-Hillaz Mansur, who was killed finally by the Mohammedans, just like Jesus, in a far worse way, they cut him piece by piece. But this happened later on when he became enlightened and declared Anal Haq, I am the truth. And Mohammedans cannot forgive anybody calling this. Only God is truth. Calling yourself truth, you are indirectly calling yourself God. But he was not calling himself God. He was simply calling, I am the truth. And he was not claiming any monopoly on it. He was saying, you are also the truth, just you don't know it, I know it. But this came later on. First, when he came to his master Junaid, it was a very sad affair. His family, his wife, his children, his old parents, his friends, his neighbors, all loved the young man. He was so beautiful, so joyous. Just his presence was a light. He was visiting all kinds of masters. Finally, he decided to leave the family and to go to Junaid, who was just residing outside the village in the forest. Junaid was very famous master. So out of the town, the family came, friends came, wife, children, neighbors, to say him goodbye, to give him a good send-off. And he went towards the forest, but again and again he looked back. Those people were still standing on the boundary of the town. Finally, when he was entering into the forest, he looked for the last time. They were still standing far away. He could not figure out who is who. And then he reached to Junaid's hut. He knocked on the door. Junaid said from the inside, he had not seen the person yet. He said, first leave the crowd outside and come alone. What crowd? He looked all around, there was no crowd. He opened the door. Junaid said, you did not follow my order. Leave the crowd outside and then come in. But he said, what crowd? I don't see anybody. I looked everywhere, there is nobody. He said, you are looking outside, look inside. The whole crowd is present. Your wife, your children, your family, your parents, your neighbors, your friends, everybody is present. Just close your eyes. That is the crowd you have to leave out. Get out. When you are finished with the crowd, come in. It took 3 years for Al-Hillah's Mansur to sit outside. Till he was finished with the family, with the crowd, till he became utterly silent. He forgot completely to enter into the hut. 3 years is a long time. He has forgotten the family, he has also forgotten the master. And there was no need now. He was completely fulfilled. Exactly at that moment, Junaid came out and said, come in now. He said, but now there is no need. He said, only now, when there is no need, I can start my work on you. Come in and close the doors. This is the family what Yaqusan means. He is saying, I am absolutely alone. I am utterly silent. I don't have a crowd of thoughts, images, dreams in my mind. And you, standing before me, although you are saying, this is what I am, I can see the crowd inside the family. You are not just this, you are that too. Ungan must have understood. Because he did not say a single word. The master was absolutely correct. When the master is absolutely correct, the disciple simply has to bow down in silence. There is no question of argument. With the master you cannot argue. And if you argue, you are creating distance between yourself and the master. Come close to the master without any argument, without any mind, without any thought, without any images, and suddenly there is a synchronicity. Your heart starts beating in tune with the master's heart. And the master's heart is already beating in tune with the heart of the universe. So in an indirect way, coming closer to the master is first step of coming closer to existence. He is the window, the door. He opens into existence. He gives you the first taste of dropping the self, of dropping the crowd, of dropping everything and just being a pure consciousness. Once Yaku-san called a boy monk to him, Dogo asked, why do you call such people? Dogo also became finally enlightened. He was a brother of Ungan. Both the brothers were disciples of Yaku-san. Dogo asked, why do you call such people? Just a young boy, how he can understand the great teachings? That's where the mind distracts you. The mind is interested in the scriptures, in the teaching, in the theology, in philosophy, in all kinds of gymnastics of words, beliefs, disbeliefs, arguments. And truth comes to those who are innocent. It can come more easily to a child than to a grown up. Because what you call growing up is nothing but gathering more rubbish, more knowledge, but nothing of the knowing. Knowing is a totally different experience than knowledge. Knowledge is borrowed. Knowing is just like a man opening his eyes to the sun. And knowledge is just like a blind man writing a thesis on light. He can write. Now there are ways the blind man can read, the blind man can write, but a blind man writing about light, will it have any relevance, any truth? It will be all borrowed. It will be all rubbish. You can know light only by your own eyes. So when Yaku-san called a young boy monk, Dogo was a scholar, great knower of the scriptures. He said, why do you call such people? What this boy will understand? Yaku-san replied, because of this, because he is so young. Because he is so fresh, because he knows nothing, he is available. You are not available. Your mind is full of thoughts, and thoughts are a thicker china wall. They prevent any master approaching your heart, your being. Yaku-san said, simply because of this, because he is so young, so fresh, so new, he knows nothing about anything. He is innocent. And the innocent has more capacity to know the truth. Those who have already become knowledgeable, they will have to drop their knowledge and become again childlike. Unless you become childlike, innocent, you cannot know the truth. Innocence is the path that leads to ultimate. Yaku-san replied, because of this. Dogo asked, why don't you throw it away? He still was not understanding the master. That is the difficulty with so-called scholars, professors, knowledgeable people. He did not hear what the master has said. On the contrary, he is saying, why don't you throw it away? This kind of boy is not going to become a Buddha. Yaku-san replied, because I have used it for a long time. I cannot throw him away. Because I have used innocence as a path towards enlightenment my whole life. A beautiful anecdote. Meditation makes you innocent. It makes you childlike. In that state, miracles are possible. That state is pure magic. A great transformation happens. In innocence, you transcend the mind. And to transcend the mind is to become the awakened one. The enlightened one. This is the only revolution, real revolution. The great rebellion that happens within you. This is what Soviet Union needs today. Basu wrote, lonely is my way. No one passes here but I. Late this autumn day, just visualize The late autumn day, soon the sunrise, soon there will be multicolors, psychedelic colors on the horizon. A beautiful autumn day, no one passes here by but I. He is talking about his inside. No one passes here but I. Lonely is my way. Lonely is everybody's way. The master can only indicate, can point his finger to the moon, but you should look at the moon, not at the finger. If you look at the finger, you miss the moon. You miss the master, his indication. And that's what has happened to all so-called religions. They are holding fingers. Somebody the finger of Jesus, somebody the finger of Krishna, somebody the finger of Muhammad. Nobody is looking at the moon. And because these people themselves don't understand, they are very joyful that my finger is being caught by 600 million Catholics. The Pope is immensely happy. 600 million Catholics holding my finger. But the question is not the finger. The question is the moon. And the path is alone. It is the moon within you. The master can indicate, I am doing it every day, indicating where to go, how to go, how much energy is needed to reach there, what kind of experiences will be happening on the path, and what kind of experiences will be happening when you have reached to the center of your being. I can only indicate, but you have to go. If you don't go, I am helpless. Manisha has asked a question. Our beloved master, neither communism nor Zen have a God as a central hypothesis on which a belief system is based. Does this imply that Russia might have a greater affinity with Zen than the West has? Certainly, Manisha. Soviet Union will be more capable and receptive because it has dropped all the gods and all the superstitions surrounding the god. It has dropped all consolations, all opiums. It has dropped all that has been forced on man for millennia. Soviet Union is almost in a state of innocence. But the danger is that this innocence can be exploited if the Soviet leaders are not conscious about it, that there is an innocent mind created in 70 years, and this can be exploited by organized religions very easily. Keep the organized religions out. Soviet Union needs a totally different kind of religiousness which these organized religions cannot supply. They don't have it themselves. Soviet Union needs a contemporary man with no past absolutely present now and here, who can help this innocence to blossom into blue lotuses. Soviet Union has much more possibility than the capitalist West. In fact, the capitalist countries of the West used to call Soviet Union the East, although it is not the East, but they include it into the East. They don't consider it a Western country. Perhaps it is a good sign. Unconsciously they have called it the East. It can really become the East, and far more better than the East is, because the East is poor. It has the roof, but it does not have the pillars. It does not have the foundation. Under the roof, people are cursing, dying, starvation. It knows the inner world, but it has no idea that the outer world is not unreal. It is as real as the inner. Both are real, both are existential, and both need to have a synchronicity, a harmony between matter and spirit. Between that which can be seen and that which cannot be seen, a deep accord is needed. Yes, Manisha, Soviet Union has much more vulnerability, much more receptivity than the capitalist West. The capitalist West is too much in the mind. Too much in the thinking. The Western part of the world still follows people like Aristotle and Socrates, great giants, but only confined to the refinement of the mind. Socrates and his dialogues are beautiful. The highest that mind can reach, and Aristotle is the father of Western logic. All the philosophers of the West, from Greece to Germany, Kant, Hegel, Feuerbach, to the contemporary world, Sartre, Jaspers, Marcel, Soren Kierkegaard, Bertrand Russell, Whitehead, G. Moore, they are all in the same line of intellectual giants. But they don't know anything about meditation. And they will argue against meditation. They will say there is nothing beyond the mind. Without experimenting, A strange thing I remember. In Greece, traditionally it is believed that women don't have the same number of teeth as men. Obviously, the reason is the woman should be in every way second rate to man. How she can have the same number of teeth as men? And Aristotle has two wives, not one. And he could have asked number one wife or number two that just let me count your teeth. Or while they were asleep, he could have counted their teeth. And most women are continuously talking and they don't have mustache like me. You cannot count my teeth. Even just talking he could have managed to count, but he depended on his logic that certainly women are a lower category than men. Just male chauvinist idea. In his book of logic, he writes that women have lesser teeth than men. Logic is non-experimental. Science is experimental. And Zen, which is the science of the inner, is also experimental. Just the inner experiment is called experience, and the outer experience is called experiment. But unless you experience and experiment with the inner, you don't have any right to deny that there is nothing beyond the mind. Have you gone beyond the mind? Have you reached beyond the mind just trying to find out whether there is something beyond the mind? No one, neither Russell, nor Soren Kierkegaard, nor Martin Heidegger, nobody has tried to reach beyond the mind. Martin Heidegger has written a book on Zen. But that book is also just intellectual. And you can see that the man was not a meditator because he was a follower of Adolf Hitler. That was a great giant intellectual of Germany. And still followed a madman, a crackpot, Adolf Hitler. That shows his insight that he knows nothing about the inner. No man of meditation will follow Adolf Hitler. That's why I said, by vocation I am a logician. By mistake I am a mystic. Because to be sane in an insane world is very difficult and hard. That's why I call it a mistake. But I would love you to commit the mistake. I love to corrupt people, their morality, their religion. Anything you give me and I will corrupt it. Corruption is my business. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Now he has come back with his rainbow turban where he is sitting. there is a job opening at the local zoo for two men to clean out the gorilla cages. Paddy and Seamus go directly from the pub to apply. Before I give you lads the job, says Duckworth Bird, the head keeper, I want to ask you a few questions. Okay, says Paddy, I am ready. The first question, says Duckworth, what bird does not build its own nest? That's easy, says Seamus. It is a canary. He lives in a cage. That is not it, you idiot, says Paddy, digging Seamus in the ribs with his elbow. It is a cuckoo. Very good, Paddy, says Duckworth. Bird, how did you know? Ah, replies Paddy, everybody knows that a cuckoo lives in a clock. Hamish McTavish and Sandy McPherson go mountaineering in the Swiss Alps. Suddenly, Hamish loses his footing, slips and falls off a cliff into a deep crevasse. Sandy McPherson pokes his head over the cliff and just sees the fingertips of his Scottish friend clinging to a rock. Are you all right, Hamish? Shouts Sandy. Not exactly, gasps Hamish. But if you run down to the village 10 miles back and get some rope, I will try to hang on until you get back. But hurry, for God's sake. Sandy McPherson goes running off down the mountainside. An hour later, his face suddenly reappears over the edge of the precipice. Are you still there, Hamish? He shouts. Jesus Christ, just barely, shouts back Hamish, hanging on by one hand. Have you got the rope? Ah, replies McPherson. No. Those tight Swiss bastards wanted 2 francs for it. Old Father Fumble is invited to the local high school for its graduation ceremonies, but he is shocked and scandalized by some of the latest fashion outfits worn by the girls. Look at that youngster, cries Fumble to the person next to him, the one with the orange hair, the cigarette and the purple pants. Is it a boy or a girl? A girl, snaps his companion. And by the way, she is my daughter. I am sorry, sir, says the flustered Fumble. Do forgive me. I would never have said anything had I known you were her father. I am not, you idiot, says the other. I am her mother. Nivedana. be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. Gather your whole life energy and rush towards the center of your being with total consciousness, with an urgency as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth. Without this urgency, you will never reach to the center. Faster and faster, deeper and deeper, as you start coming closer to your center, a great silence descends over you. The more closer you are, you find fountains of peace and serenity surrounding you. As you reach to the very center, for the first time you know who you are, the Buddha. The Buddha simply means the awakened one. It has nothing to do with Gautama Buddha. He was one of the Buddhas among thousands of Buddhas. Of course, the most well-known Buddha. But his name was not Buddha. His name was Gautama Siddhartha. Buddha was his awakening. The same awakening, the same silence you are in, the same blossoming of your center into a lotus flower. You must have seen Gautama Buddha's statues sitting on a lotus flower. This moment, Gautama, the Buddha auditorium, is full of 10,000 Buddhas. You have to remember only one quality. Buddha consists only of one quality: witnessing. Just being a witness. Without any judgment, without any identification, just watching as if you are only a mirror. Witness that you are not the body, witness that you are not the mind, witness that you are only a witness, just pure consciousness, and suddenly you are come into touch with your eternal life, with your immortal being. Suddenly you have come to the very close of the heartbeat of the cosmos. Your being a Buddha is the door to the cosmos. To make this witnessing more clear, Nivedana, relax, let go of the body, but keep remembering one thing, that you are a Buddha, and the Buddha has only one quality. He is made up only of one thing, that is witnessing. Whole religious experience can be reduced in a single word: witnessing. And as you get deeper into witnessing, you start melting like ice into the ocean. The Buddha auditorium suddenly turns into an ocean of pure consciousness without any ripples, without any waves, just so utterly silent. Flowers from the beyond start raining on you in celebration of your achievement. This moment, you are the most blessed people on the earth. The evening was beautiful on its own, but your coming closer to your ultimate nature, the Buddhahood, you have made it a splendor, a miracle, a magical moment, just gather all the flowers and the fragrances and the juices of life. You have to bring them with you. And don't forget to persuade the Buddha to come along. First he will come slowly, slowly, as a shadow to you. He has been hiding at the center for millions of years. You have to bring it back from the center to the circumference of your life. First, he will be just behind you as a shadow. In the second step, you will be behind him as a shadow. In the third step, you will merge into the Buddha. And Buddha is pure consciousness, hence it casts no shadow. It is absolutely transparent. The moment you become a Buddha in your day-to-day existence, chopping wood, carrying water from the well, that day will be the greatest day in your life, the day of awakening, the day of being reborn as a Buddha. In this very moment, you are so close to it, persuade him to come along with you. He is your ultimate nature, so he cannot deny your request. Welcome him. Nivedana, come back, but come back with great peace, silence, tranquility, serenity. Come back as a Buddha with all grace. Sit down for few seconds, just to remember where you have been, what golden path you have followed, remember who is behind you, the Buddha. He has to come in front of you. These are the three steps of Zen. First, the Buddha comes behind you as a shadow. Second step, he comes in front of you. You become the shadow. Third, the shadow disappears into the Buddha. Only a transparent consciousness remains, which is eternal, absolute freedom, love, compassion, beauty, godliness. This I call the Zen fire and the Zen wind. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, beloved Master. Thank you.